This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
And like PJ Tucker's a player that you can put on Kyrie Irving. You can also put him on Kevin Love, and you can also put him on LeBron James. Like, that kind of player defensively is incredibly valuable.
Kevin Rayfuse.
To be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
A lot of the times, from my understanding, is close games are won by the coach calling those inbound plays and drawing up a quick sideline play for him.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
Sometimes when you record podcasts, you run into a little bit of a, let's say, creative block once in a while. And I think we're going to start the episode by saying Tim and I, we ran into a creative block this morning a little bit when it comes to this intro.
I wouldn't say just every once in a while either. The intro is hands down the hardest part of the show to come up with.
Absolutely. Like in the NBA, the narratives write their own. We just sit back and observe. Whereas the intros, you know, we like to do timely news or something funny or, you know, maybe in our personal lives. But every once in a while, just not that much has happened. And we're not going to, you know, be like, hey, Tim, did you see those storms yesterday? Because honestly, does anyone care?
No, nobody cares. And before this episode started, we talked about introing with Waffle House and the best late night food. But when you suggested that, Kevin, I was thinking, I feel like we've done that like four times. And how many times can you do it? So this is sort of a call to action for you while you're listening to this podcast right now, is that you can really help us out because we spend probably a good half hour or so coming up with an intro to each episode. Sometimes they're better. Sometimes they aren't. Mm-hmm. They can't all be winners. But if you know of a good intro topic that you think we should talk about to intro the show, let us know. Send us a tweet at Drive and Dish NBA. You can hit us up on the Facebook page. You can go to driveanddishpodcast.com, click on the contact button, send us an email there. But we want to hear from you. We want you guys to help us come up with intros for the show. And of course, we'll give you full credit and give you a shout out on the show if we use your intro.
Absolutely. But the intro that you would be providing us is for this show, the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
I stay loyal because the ball does not lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, is our producer, Justin Kuzart, who once again is still not here. Justin, as we told you guys last week, is in Jamaica. He really likes this event in St. Augustine called Reggae Sunday. He lives for it every week. So he went to Jamaica to get his inspiration to make Reggae Sunday even greater.
I actually did speak with Justin, and he did say that he thought about going down to Cuba because Fidel Castro likes reggae music so much.
That's just not historically accurate at all. It's not.
Well, it is, because he firsthand account that Fidel Castro also likes reggae.
I don't think he did. But something that Justin did do, and that we didn't mention on the last show that we probably should mention, is it was Justin's birthday this week. So if you haven't wished Justin a happy birthday, make sure you add him at Justin C on the air and wish that fool a happy birthday. He's 25 years old. As he said on his Twitter page, he was a quarter today.
He was Justin's such a you youngins. But yeah, send Justin a tweet at Justin C on the air and send him a happy belated birthday. So each week on the show, we like to give you guys a shout out for giving us a shout out on the show. Leaving us a review on iTunes or Stitcher really does help out the show.
Absolutely. And we got a review on iTunes this week. It's from America. It's by Muhammad Salim. It's called All NBA Podcast First Team. It's a 5-star review, and Muhammad says, I subscribe to 30 different NBA podcasts for my daily NBA newsletter, and Drive and Dish definitely stands out from the crowd. I include these guys in the news and entertainment category, and they more than hold their own against the likes of Jalen and Jacoby, SI's Open Floor, and CBS's Eye on Basketball. I wouldn't be surprised to see them make a leap like Basketball Jones in the coming seasons. In fact, that would be well-deserved. I find these guys are always very well-prepared to discuss and debate topics, and whether you agree with them or not, you will always learn something new. The audio quality is great thanks to their new recording bunker, and all the hosts have very sexy voices, especially Justin, parentheses, serenade me, baby. I was going to give these guys the Most Improved Podcasters Award, but decided against it because they benefited from getting my All Starters Minutes this year.
Or
all my Starters Minutes this year, I should
say. That's really nice.
Yeah, that was
one. But I was also thinking, like, Most Improved. I suppose we have gotten better.
Oh, we've definitely gotten better from when we started.
Well, from when we started, right. I mean, we've been doing this for a while.
I think we're, yeah, it's been a quiet, like, we're quietly going on our third year now. We're fully in our second year. I think
we're in our third season.
Right. March was our second year anniversary because we started, I think it was just past the All-Star break. Because I remember going to that bar and we watched that just god-awful dunk contest. It was just the worst thing I've ever seen.
It was a pretty bad dunk contest.
Oh, boy. It was horrendous. And I remember watching that. And I think it was a week or two later we started the podcast. So, yeah, this is our third actual season doing the podcast.
Yeah, going into the off-season, too. So, coming up on the fourth.
I think we've improved from last year.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I feel like there's a renewed energy. The what was his name?
Muhammad.
Muhammad that left the review mentioned the new recording studio. And, you know, it doesn't sound quite as good as the last one, but can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's been a renewed interest since changing the location. We brought this up before, but you have a lot of bands who travel when they record their albums.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like that, traveling while recording.
Well, it's just the flexibility. We have the flexibility to record when we want to record. Thank you, though, Muhammad, for this review. Seriously, this was really nice. We appreciate it. We're glad that we have cracked your all-NBA first team of podcasts. We really appreciate it. And, again, you can always leave us those reviews on iTunes. Got some reviews on Stitcher that we're going to be reading coming up, too. So stay tuned for that. You'll get a shout-out to the show.
No, hold on. Before we do news, I just want to say that we are so much better than Jalen and Jacoby.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, the NBA has decided not to suspend Draymond Green for Game 4. Green kicked Steven Adams in the groin area after being fouled going up for a shot attempt. Green also kneed Adams in the groin area in Game 2 when driving to the basket. It has been reported that there will be a flagrant 2 and a fine coming Green's way. Kevin Love sat out the entire fourth quarter of the Cavs' Game 4 loss to Toronto after stepping on a referee's foot. He didn't injure his ankle, but more his knee. Kevin Love says he does expect to play in Game 5. Bradley Beal says he's going to seek out a maximum contract from the Washington Wizards, but this was kind of expected. He is a restricted free agent at the age of 22, which means he could sign a four-year deal with a rival team. Beal says, I want to be valued the right way. I feel like I'm a max player, and that's what I'm looking for. As a four-year veteran, Beal could earn up to 25% of the cap. If the cap is $92 million, then the max deal could pay him $23 million next season. The Wizards did not offer Beal a max contract extension back in October. Apparently, the cost of the new Kings Arena has jumped from $447 million to $534 million. The city's subsidy has been capped at $255 million, and the owners of the Kings have apparently been taking care of the costs themselves. And lastly in your news, the Golden State Warriors are going to interview Nate Tibbetts as a candidate to become their top assistant coach. The Warriors are looking, obviously, to replace Luke Walton. Tibbetts traveled to OKC to meet with the Warriors officials on Monday night. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
Hey, it's Justin. Wanted to take a second to talk to you about SeatGeek, our first sponsor for the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. What they are is they are a downloadable app where you can buy any ticket to any concert, venue, or event happening around town. Actually, I went to the Players because of them. Had really cheap tickets. But if it is in a concert venue, what you can do is you can see a green dot, a yellow dot, or a red dot. Those dots meaning good deal, okay deal, not so great deal. And obviously, you will want to pick the better deal. Once you pick that deal and go through the buying process, the price will not change from when they showed you it at the first time. A lot of those ticket services will actually increase the charge as you go along with taxes, random fees for buying on a certain day or something like that. SeatGeek does not do that. So if you want to show SeatGeek that you like the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, what you can do is download the SeatGeek app, click the settings tab in the top right corner of the phone, and it will say enter a promo code. checkout. Enter the promo code DISH, like D-I-S-H, and they'll hook you up with $20 off your first purchase. It actually doesn't have to be your first purchase. They'll just take $20 off your next purchase, but it shows them that you support the show. We hook you up with $20. And of course, if all that was too much, please go to driveanddishpodcast.com and go to the sponsors tab. It'll show you how to do it there.
So I feel like for the last like three episodes, we've just been talking about coaches and coaches and coaches.
It's just been right out of news every single time. But that's what happens when almost a third of the NBA's coaching just gets fired or just stops wanting to be the coach anymore, like Scott Skiles.
So you're you know what about the Scott Skiles thing that I don't think we brought up either before is that there's not a lot of coaches that resign. There's a lot of coaches that get fired, but resigning coaches is a pretty rare occurrence.
You have to really dislike your situation to resign.
I guess that from everything I'm reading is that essentially Scott Skiles wanted to move on from Elfrid Payton.
Yeah.
And some of the younger players, and the ownership management didn't.
GM Rob Hennigan, yeah, they were invested in these guys.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they probably should be. I mean, I don't know what kind of trades were out there on the open market, but you don't just trade guys for the sake of trading guys.
No.
Anyway, it looks like the Magic have really landed themselves a solid coaching pickup, though, in Frank Vogel.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about Frank Vogel as being one of the best coaches on the market. We all thought Indiana firing him was a mistake. You know, here we have a proven defensive winner going to try to get a little bit of a better offensive situation than he had in Orlando. But
it kind of reminds me when he took over the Pacers. And for anybody listening right now, you got to picture Kevin with three blankets over the back of his head.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm really distracted. You kind of flew off my, that's why I defaulted to the, you know, there. You like kind of threw off my mojo a little bit.
He's got like three blankets over the back of him for sound quality, and he's got an air mattress leaned up against his back. The perks of recording in a home studio.
What did Muhammad call it? A recording bunker?
Yeah, that's. It kind of reminds me, Frank Vogel, of when he took over the Pacers. A couple of budding stars, a defensive-oriented team. I was a little bit surprised. I honestly felt like Jeff Hornacek, who we'll get to in a minute, would have been a really good fit for the Magic.
I think Hornacek would have been a good fit. I think that Frank Vogel is a good fit. The one thing that immediately kind of jumps out, and I believe Keith was the one who tweeted us this, when we asked, shout out to Keith Smith, when we asked him about the Orlando news. And, you know, Frank Vogel has always loved a really defensive-oriented center. And so does this mean it's the end of Nick Vucevic in Orlando? Because while Vucevic is a really good center, he's not exactly the best defender. His talents come more on the offensive end.
Well, let's start the Dwight Howard rumors right now. I mean, there's a lot of rumors of Dwight Howard going back to Orlando. I mean, you bring up a good point. That's something that I didn't think about. I guess Keith brought it up, but you're bringing it up now. That Frank Vogel does prefer a defensive-minded center. I don't know that they move on from Vucevic, though. Vucevic is a really good player, and a young Vucevic seems so much more valuable than an old Dwight Howard.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm not saying it's set in stone, and if you make the decision to move on from Vucevic, I don't think it's something you take lightly, but we know what type of guy Vogel has preferred in the past, and so you wonder that when the opportunity isn't there if they don't take it.
I wonder what he's going to do with Aaron Gordon, too. Like, how he's going to be able to maximize Aaron Gordon.
Well, we've talked about Aaron Gordon. What's his number one ability going into the NBA? Ever since he's been drafted, is his defensive ability. We've said he's always had the potential to turn into a lockdown defender. I think he's going to excel in this system. I think Oladipo can really do well in this system, too.
Well, I mean, Frank Vogel was able to do really good things with George Hill and, you know, Monte Ellis, even to a certain extent. Even though Monte Ellis is very clearly declining, I wonder what it means if they're gonna bring back Brandon Jennings, if they're gonna keep Ersan Ilyasova, what that means to the team. But what the Magic win last year, like 35 games or something?
Yeah.
So they improved 10 over the season before. Also, the Knicks went after my guy Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah, and it's funny because this was so typical New York. And Knicks fans, I love to have fun at your expense sometimes. And it's just because you guys really are so downtrodden on yourselves that even when you have a nice thing happen, you can't accept it as a nice thing. It's like when Porzingis got drafted. What did Knicks fans do? They booed the hell out of it. And then just wait until Porzingis gets in uniform and all of a sudden he's the best thing ever. And it's like, guys, we kind of knew at the time that Porzingis was the right pick. Like, believe it or not, your management is capable of right decisions. And when Jeff Hornacek got hired, every Knicks fan I knew on Twitter was freaking out. They were so mad that this is such a dumb decision. They're like, he got washed out of Phoenix. He can't be that great of a coach. Blah, 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 blah. Just rambling like it was the end of the world. And it's like, guys, this was a good decision. Like, I like Hornacek's fit for the Knicks. I think of all the coaches you could have brought in, I thought, Hornacek kind of got screwed by the moves that management made in Phoenix more than I think that it was him being a bad coach.
Jeff Hornacek, and I just watched Jeff Hornacek coach for the last 3 years. I was a big fan of Jeff Hornacek. He's a damn good coach. In his third season, you could tell that he was coaching for his job, and so he was making some lineup choices that I found questionable, but you could tell it was quite literally a guy just trying anything to win.
Yeah, you got to throw something at a wall and hope it sticks.
Right. But Jeff Hornacek is a really good coach. The only thing about Jeff Hornacek is that he's a guards coach. And, he used to play shooting guard back in the day for the Utah Jazz, the Phoenix Suns. He was the main player involved in the trade that brought Charles Barkley to the Suns, back in the 90s. But Jeff Hornacek is a really good coach. And the thing about the Knicks is that they don't have any damn guards. So I wonder how good of a fit it is, but regardless, I do hear that he's not going to be forced to run the triangle.
That's big.
And I'm really happy to hear that because I think this obsession with the triangle just needs to stop.
Yeah, it's got to stop. It hasn't worked. The Knicks haven't been good since Phil's been trying to just hammer this triangle down everyone's throat. Then they had Kurt Rambis trying to do it, and that was just an absolute disaster. And on top of that, it rubs players the wrong way. Like, Carmelo Anthony clearly wants nothing to do with the triangle. Aaron Aflalo was livid by the end of the season. Like, they need to move on. Like, Michael Jordan isn't walking through the door. Kobe Bryant's not walking through the door. Like, you don't need to run the triangle. There's other ways to be successful other than the triangle.
I do wonder if Kurt Rambis is going to stay on the assistant coaching staff, though.
I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's really tough for, and that's just anywhere around the league. Once you've been a head coach, to step back and take the demotion and be an assistant when you had the opportunity to be the head coach of that team moving forward and they didn't trust you enough to do it, it's kind of just hurt feelings.
Yeah, I also wonder about if Jeff Hornacek, how much of the assistant coaching staff he's going to be able to pick. I know that the Suns let go a few of their assistant coaches before firing Jeff Hornacek. And, shout out to Earl Watson and being able to stay. But I know that the Cavs picked up the Suns' defensive coach. But I do believe that there's one out there, and I hope that Jeff Hornacek gets some control. But anyway, for Knicks fans, you guys got a really good coach.
Yeah. And there's no reason to be upset about it. Before we move off this, can we talk about the New York Daily News headline?
Oh, God. There was, who was it? It was David King from Bright Side of the Sun tweeted that the New York Knicks media has had more fun with Jeff Hornacek than the Phoenix media did in all 3 years. I mean, there's just like pictures of Jeff Hornacek's daughter. There's like, call me horny baby. I mean, it is like, no wonder coaches and players have a hard time in New York.
Oh, well, that's just the Daily News, though. The Daily News, they always go for whatever the most shocking or punchy headline is you can go. I mean, what was it when the Tom Brady Deflategate thing happened? It was something about like Brady like loses his balls or something. It's like there's a picture of him like it's outrageous.
I mean, it was them, but it wasn't just them. There's so much more media in those larger markets, and I think that we discount the kind of pressure that the coaches and the players are in when they're playing in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, it's definitely there, and it's because I mean New York is a basketball city. Like, there really is a huge, passionate basketball fan base there who's just, they're starving for a championship. The Knicks haven't won a title since 1973. It's been a long time. Those fans, and the fact of the matter is, they haven't really been close either since the 90s.
No, it was 3 or 4 years ago, I think they made it to the second round or something, and J.R. Smith and Carmelo Anthony were out partying and blew some games to the Heat that they could have won. But they made it to the second round.
Yeah, I mean, those teams are fun. And people, like, I remember Stoudemire's first year in New York when he was playing MVP level. All the fun that was around that and Lynn's sanity. Like, New York will be nuts the day the Knicks win a title from having lived there for 4 years.
It'll also just be really good for basketball in general. You want some of those bigger markets that haven't won in a while to get that. Speaking of changes, though, the Minnesota Timberwolves have announced major front office changes. in the wake of the Tom Thibodeau hiring. And so I'm going to read a little bit of this off to you. The Minnesota Timberwolves president of basketball operations and head coach Tom Thibodeau and general manager Scott Layden this afternoon announced changes to the team's front office and schedule and coaching structure. Quote, effective immediately, the following individuals will be relieved of their respective duties. Previous general manager Milt Newton, vice president of basketball operations, Rob Badcock, vice president of sports performance, Arnie Kander, assistant coach, Sid Lowe, director of sports performance, Kochi Sato, manager of team travel facilities, coordinator Bill Hohenecker, head of video department, manager of basketball technology, Bryce Long, and scouts Milton Barnes and Jason Hervey. They are cleaning house. I don't know a lot about how well these guys have done in their jobs. The one thing I can say is that the Timberwolves were relatively healthy over the last year, in respect to the rest of the league, but especially in respect to their franchise. And Arnie Kander, I'm not sure that that was a good decision letting him go, especially with how much that team has been injured in years past.
When a guy like Thibodeau comes in, he took over this president of basketball operations. Everybody said that Thibodeau was going to want his guys and the power, and that is clearly evident here when you're cleaning house. So I'm not going to pretend like I know a ton about these moves.
If there's other teams out there that are searching for medical training staff to keep their players healthy, I just think that getting Arnie Kander is going to be at the top of their list. Also, the Timberwolves are working with Mayo Clinic now. I know because I used to date somebody that worked at Mayo Clinic.
Oh.
She believed that we were helicopter pilots.
Oh, that was the foreign chick.
Yeah, the foreign chick.
Yeah, I remember her.
Yeah. Speaking of the Timberwolves, Karl-Anthony Towns is so damn good he's getting double doubles after the season has ended. The NBA credited him with one more board against Portland on 4-9, bringing his total to 52 on the season, third most in the NBA.
Did you just call it 4-9?
Yeah.
April 9th?
Whatever.
The thing is, why is the NBA watching this game?
Right.
It's just kind of random.
They're like, hold on, let's go back to the stats.
I mean, like, yeah, aren't there playoffs to watch? Or just, it seems random. I mean, good for Karl-Anthony Towns, though. It's just adding to another stat to another ridiculous rookie season. That dude is so good. We talked about him last episode with the Rookie of the Year, but you know what? Let's talk about something, because I've kind of been thinking about this recently, and it's a bit random, but has Karl-Anthony Towns passed Anthony Davis in terms of the big man, like, oh my God, this guy's the best prospect of all time list?
Yes.
Like, do you remember, like, this was everybody was talking about Anthony Davis this way going into the season, including myself, and I still am. Like, I think Anthony Davis is that good, but it's like, I feel like Towns has kind of cooled some of that hype off a little bit.
There was a time in which we were talking about how Kevin Durant was never going to be the best player in the league, because by the time LeBron declined, Anthony Davis would be at his peak.
And then Steph Curry just blew that out of the water.
And it just, like, all that stuff never came to fruition. And that's the thing about basketball. So you're talking about, you know, it's such a recency bias league. Anthony Davis had a pretty terrible season. All of a sudden, nobody's talking about him anymore. The Thunder lose game one to the Spurs, and it's the end of the world. The Warriors lose game one to the Thunder, and it's the end of the world. The Warriors win game two, and all of a sudden, it's going to be a five-game series. I mean, this sport is so recency bias that it's really mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's true, though. It really is a what-have-you-done-for-me league. Every season is so different, and people just forget about certain trends. Like, I remember back when the Thunder played the Heat in 2011 in the finals, everyone was like, oh, the Thunder are going to be right back here. And now 4 or 5 years later, the Thunder still have that chance to get back, and may finally get back this year if they're able to beat the Warriors. But it's just like, we got to step back and remember once in a while that all these things that we anoint aren't necessarily going to happen. You know, not everybody is LeBron James, for example, where, you know, you remember the Sports Illustrated cover when he was 16 years old, that he was the chosen one, and then actually lives up to the hype of being called the chosen one.
Well, we talk about small windows to win a championship. I mean, your window is, for the most part, one, maybe two seasons.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of teams that make it back-to-back to the finals, except for unless you're on LeBron James's team.
And that's what makes what LeBron is doing, for example, or what the Spurs have done since 99 so special, and why we hold them in such high regard, is because it is extremely difficult to win an NBA title. I mean, seriously, how many teams since 1980 how many franchises have won an NBA title. I think it's less than 10.
The last, like, 10 were, like, three teams or something.
Right. It's like, I mean, the Warriors were obviously the new one to that list, but what other teams have won since 1980 than the Warriors? The Lakers, the Celtics, the Pistons, the Spurs.
The Mavericks.
The Mavericks, the Heat, the Sixers in 83, the Bulls with Jordan, and the Rockets with the two Hakeem Olajuwon years. That's it. That's 10 franchises. 10 out of the 30 franchises have won since 1980. You know, we're now going on a 40-year period. It is extremely difficult to win an NBA title. And even some of them, I mean, you know, we talk about the Sixers, for example, and the Mavericks in that list. They've only won once. I guess the point is not to just keep beating this horse. Is that it is, you know, when you go for a window, it's why you see teams gamble a lot of times, because that window is so small and you want to take advantage of winning that championship when you have special players and you, while it's there, because for a lot of teams, it's not there. I mean, even this season, how many teams did we realistically think could win the championship? Maybe six. It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, I would have put that at four.
And even that could be being generous, maybe. Two of those teams are already out.
I've always wondered, though, how many times LeBron would have been to the finals if he played out West. And I know that's always going to be part of the conversation with LeBron.
Yeah.
But how many times would he have made it through the West? I'd cut that number in half that he's been to the finals.
It's true. I mean, the West, we know, this year was the first year where it finally seemed like it started to even out a little bit. Because I felt from top to bottom, the East was better. I just think there was only one true contender in the East, and that's Cleveland. Where in the West, you know, the 5 through 8, I should say, in the West, I think was definitively worse than the 5 through 8 in the East. And I think that people are... Like, I think the narrative that the Cavs have had an easy route to the finals is really kind of old. I think those lower East teams had success against many Western teams. I think all of those teams are still really good. They're just not going to have to go through that one true contender the way that, you know, Golden State or Oklahoma City, whichever one of these teams that comes out on top, has, where they had to beat, you know, a Spurs along the way. Or, you know, if you're the Warriors, had to beat that Thunder. Or if you're the Thunder, taking the most difficult route, having to beat both of them.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
That three seed is brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the three seed never seemed so bad until this year, and all of a sudden it's like, man, you gotta go through the Warriors and the Spurs. I mean, it's just an impossible feat.
Yeah. It is really difficult, and unfortunately we're at one of those points with the scheduling where, and we're going to talk about the NBA scheduling because it's just ridiculous.
Oh, dude, it makes me so angry.
I mean, we're recording this on a Saturday morning. The Warriors and the Thunder will have had 4 days off between games.
There was no reason why on a Friday night there wasn't an OKC Warriors game. There wasn't a reason for it.
No.
And then the fact that the NBA decides, okay, well, we're going to play it on Sunday, fine. Make it at 3, make it at 4, don't make it at 8 o'clock at night on a Sunday. It means anybody out on the East Coast, or depending on where you're living overseas, you know, that game's on it. You can't stay up till 11 o'clock. People have to work on Monday morning.
Well, and even on the schedule, it's like we're finally getting Cleveland-Toronto tonight. But Cleveland-Toronto just played on Thursday. This will be their third game already. It's like, how did they, after they started their series later, have jumped ahead of the Western Conference Finals now? It doesn't make sense to me.
No, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's got to be a legitimate reason for it, because I remember last year during the playoffs and the final rounds of the playoffs, us talking about the same damn thing.
It always is, though. We always talk about this every single year. The finals schedule is the most obnoxious thing of all time. It really is. Like, even down to the start times. I mean, I understand why they start the games when they have to, but it's like, yo, if you're going to start the games at 9:30 at night, can we cut, like, the pregame ceremonies a little bit? Like, can we cut the crap? Can we air it earlier? Like, yeah, I'm a little bit of East Coast complaining, and at the end of the day, I don't have any right to complain living on the East Coast, because we have it so much better for general sports watching than our West Coast counterparts do. Our West Coast counterparts really only get their teams a lot of the time, or they got to, you know, watch it while they're at work type deal or something. You know, that 3-hour difference really is a big deal.
I had it when I was living out in Arizona, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really nice.
Yeah, like, you guys can watch everything. It's just the earlier games aren't at ideal times, but it's like, yo, 9:30 for East Coast listeners, like, you're killing us, man. I got things to do in the morning.
We cannot stay up until midnight on a Tuesday. I do hope they change that.
But you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Cousart. Follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA.
So one thing that I hoped would change, but didn't, it looks like, is so Joel Embiid, I've been reading about all the progress he's been making. And it doesn't look like he's going to be ready for summer league. And I just, Kevin, I don't get it, man.
What don't you get? Because I feel like this is common knowledge. Like, they've said this since last season, that they said once Embiid committed to the second surgery, they didn't think he would be ready for summer league, and they didn't think that he would be ready for the first couple of weeks of preseason, that it would probably be around the beginning, end of preseason, beginning of regular season when he'd suit up. Like, it's just, the thing with Embiid is they're taking the ultimate time with Embiid. And maybe I'm looking at this glass half full because I've only heard good reports coming out of camp since then. He's been at practice. He's been on Twitter again. He's been at the Sixers facility. He's been at games. You know, he's talked about in a sentence that he's a part of this team. The mentality I take as a Sixers fan right now with Joel Embiid has been what it's been since last year. If he plays, great. In the meantime, I'm not looking at him as a huge part of the team going forward. I will admit that I'm enthused by the positive reports. I don't take this as a setback because they'd already been saying it since last year. It's not like this is anything new to me. That's why I'm not quite as concerned about this.
So it's not new?
No. And that's why it's new that it's official. But they've basically said this the whole time is we don't think he'll be ready for summer league. So I'm not really shocked when they say he won't be ready for summer league. They're doing their due diligence. Again, I hope that he plays because I think Embiid, if healthy and truly at 100%, can be in that conversation with Karl Anthony Towns, with Anthony Davis, of these elite center prospects. But I'm also not holding my breath because it's been 2 years. You hope that he's healthy because it allows you to kind of clear up the logjam that you have with Jahlil Okafor and with Nerlens Noel. That's only going to get more interesting if you take Ben Simmons, which I said I was going to flip-flop back and forth last episode with the lottery. I was kind of more on Ingram last lottery, and I have fully talked myself into going back to Ben Simmons at number one. That's all
I've read reports that the Sixers are leaning towards Ben Simmons.
I just, like, I went back and I watched some of his passing, and I watched the games where he was truly excelling at LSU and looked interesting. And then I went back and, like, read a lot of the reports and read a lot of the Australian connections with Brett Brown, and I just have completely talked myself back into Ben Simmons at number one.
Yeah, Brett Brown coached Ben Simmons' father, right?
Yes. You know, that Australia connection, you hope, is strong. The thing with Ben Simmons, and I said this a little bit last episode, is when you draft a guy like Ben Simmons, he will be successful. You just need to surround him with a certain type of player.
Shooting, man. You guys severely need some shooting.
And the advantage that you have with a guy like Brandon Ingram is that you can plug him in anywhere and he can shoot. Now, I think Ben Simmons' shooting concerns are real.
Well, where do the Sixers get shooting from?
Where do the Sixers get shooting from? I think you go out and you spend money. I think that you potentially trade Okafor if the draft picks are there and you draft guys like that. At the end of the day, regardless of what they do with Okafor and Noel and that whole center jam and what direction they decide to move there, they still have the Thunder pick. They still have the Heat pick. So they have 3 picks in the first round this year. You can draft shooters that are maybe available. Again, the depth in this draft.
Would you trade Ja for Phoenix's number 4 pick to get a point guard?
I would need something more than the number 4 pick, but I would trade for the number 4 pick, yeah. Because I think at that point you're going to get one of either Dunn, Bender, or Murray. I don't think Bender will be on the board personally.
You'd assuming that Bender wasn't on the board, because if Bender was on the board, I think the Suns would just take him.
I think Dunn's a better prospect, but I might take Murray if I've taken Simmons.
Because you guys need a point guard really bad, too.
And I think Murray fits better with Simmons than Dunn does. I think Chris Dunn's a better point guard prospect overall, but I think when you draft Ben Simmons, I think with that second pick at number 4, if it's not going to be a home run difference between Dunn and Murray, I think you have to take fit.
What are the Sixers going to do with Ish Smith? Is he coming back?
I don't think so. I think the luster kind of wore off Ish at the end of the year. I think it was just more of having a truly NBA point guard in there. I think they're going to draft somebody, or I think they're going to sign somebody, go out and pay the money and get a decent point guard. I think TJ McConnell played a lot of good minutes for them last year, and I think he's the guy you want kind of backing up the point going forward. I think he can be really solid for that second unit. You know, had one of the highest assist rates of all those rookies out there, really kept the ball under control, not committing a number of turnovers. So I think he's what you want on running your second unit. So I think Ish Smith's time is done in Philly. Mm.
Well, we've talked a little bit about Philly now, and so you've heard of, like, what do they call it on the internet? Like, way back time machines or whatever, when they go and there's like old GeoCities sites that they kind of save for like the archives.
Yeah, it lets you go on the internet as if you were in 1999.
Right. So I found one about 21 NBA predictions that ESPN made for the 21st century.
Oh, boy.
No, Kevin, don't load it up. Don't load it up. Okay. I want to get your natural reaction.
All right.
All right. We haven't done it yet, but I almost thought about doing it on this episode, was the annual GM poll. And I want to talk about how wrong they were after just 1 year, let alone 17.
Well, we got to talk about our preseason predictions too, and we can do that once it's all done, because I'd love to hear our, because like I mean off the top of my head, I know we were all wrong on Portland,
right?
But I think everybody was wrong on Portland, so I'll give us a little bit of a break there.
All right, so 21 NBA predictions for the 21st century. No more NBA draft.
Yeah, that didn't happen. Not gonna happen.
First ninth grader to jump to the NBA.
I mean, that may have happened if the NBA didn't put the rules in place, so you know.
Instant replay.
That happened.
Players pay the money to have arenas named after them. Shaq Center, Iverson Arena, Pierce Garden.
I think LeBron James just got that $1 billion deal from Nike, so I think it's reaching the level where players could have the ability to do that. That was really undervaluing how much it would cost to have that happen. Also, that would be like a ton of narcissism.
It would be. 4-on-4 in overtime.
No, it's funny, though, because hockey did that. Hockey went from 5-on-5 in overtime, and they went to 3-on-3 in overtime, and it has just totally opened up the game and has totally made just overtimes more exciting, and many of them end not in ties now, and you don't go to the shootout, which is just awful, but we're not talking about hockey. I think that would open a lot more up for basketball and would kind of increase the scoring.
I think it'd be fun.
If they did that, it would have to be with the clause that hockey did, in the sense that it's only in the regular season. It's not in the playoffs. Like, I don't want – it's got to be 5-on-5 in the playoffs.
Right. I'm not going to read all 21 of these. I'm just going to read some of the good ones. And this one I really liked. The phasing out of point guards for more talented, athletic, passing big men. That didn't happen.
Well, no, but you can see it's starting to happen a little bit. No. As you enter another phase – no, but I think passing big men have become a thing. Like, I don't think you'll ever see point guards phased out, but passing big men are absolutely a thing. A guy like Draymond Green, I don't think he's successful in a younger league.
It's the golden age of the point guard now.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying Draymond Green, like back in the 2000s and 90s, not a younger league is what I'm trying to say. But back then, I don't think that he would have been successful where you saw big men passing like that. You know, you look at a guy like Ben Simmons. We're talking about him being this game changer. What's Ben Simmons' biggest skill? His passing. He's a passing big man. You got a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is an NBA point guard at 6'10". I think this has happened. It's not at the expense of the point guard,
right?
But I think better passing big man is definitely a thing and will be a thing going forward.
I agree, but not phasing out of the point guard.
Right.
That I don't agree with. Doc Rivers becomes one of the most prolific coaches of all time. It didn't happen.
Well, I'm trying to think in my head of where I put him in the all-time rankings, and that's why I'm slower to answer this one. I don't think most prolific coaches of all time, probably not, but one of the better coaches that the NBA has ever seen, absolutely. Won a championship with Boston, was right there back with another team. His Clippers teams have been in the mix always. Doc Rivers is a great coach. Not the best GM, maybe, but a great coach.
The Kobe, Shaq, Phil Jackson dynasty wins 5 NBA titles.
Well, they won 3 and probably could have won 5 if that whole situation didn't happen. I mean, everybody from Phil to Kobe and Shaq, all of them have mentioned regrets for that exact reason, is that they could have won many, many titles, maybe even challenged that Jordan run at 6. Kobe went and got 2 more, we know, with Phil. Shaq wasn't there for it. So I guess that is partially true in the sense that Kobe and Phil did win 2 more with the Lakers. But that Shaq-Kobe is one of the biggest what-ifs in NBA history.
With all contracts fixed, there are no agents.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I love this one. Michael Jordan becomes the coach of the Charlotte Hornets.
Oh, he's the owner. It's close.
This one came true. Charles Barkley becomes a TNT announcer.
Yeah, that did happen. He's great at it. Barkley's really entertaining. That whole crew is really entertaining.
They are. Vince Carter is compared to Jordan his entire career and wins an NBA title.
Neither of those happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Vince Carter, the Jordan comparisons died pretty early, but Vince Carter was still really, really good for a lot of years with New Jersey. And I really think Vince Carter has done it, has done one of the best jobs of reinventing his game and prolonging how long he's been able to play, you know, reinventing himself as that weapon off the bench. You know, I think when it's all said and done, Vince Carter should be looked at as having a pretty great career. I mean, he'll have never reached those Jordan-esque comparisons, but there's nothing wrong with having a career like Vince Carter did. It's a shame he never got a ring.
Every team, and this is the last one, every team starts using the triangle offense.
Well, we know the Knicks have tried to for a long time. No, every team's just trying to be the Warriors now.
Right.
But you're listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. You can check out our Facebook page. Give us a like at Drive-In Dish NBA podcast.
Please, teach me how to
play basketball.
Gee, let me think. Sure.
The Drive and Dougal.
Wait. What's that?
It's like Google, if it's just the NBA.
All right, for this week's Drive and Dougal, we're going to talk about the four corners offense. Technically, it's called the four corner stall. It's an offensive strategy for stalling in basketball. Pretty much what you do is you have four players stand in the corners of the offensive half court while the fifth dribbles the ball in the middle. Most of the time, it's the point guard in the middle, but the middle player would periodically switch with other players from the corners. This was a strategy used in college basketball before the shot clock was installed. The reason people would run this is to obviously slow down the game if the team is a faster team than you. It was also used to retain a lead by holding on to the ball until the clock ran out. The trailing team would be forced to spread their defense in hopes of getting a steal, which often led to easy drives to the basket because the players in the corners might try to make a backdoor cut, or the point guard could drive the lane, which would obviously be open. You will see this a lot at the end of the game. When a team is up by just a few points, they will hold on to the ball, hoping for a very open shot. If it's not there, they won't take it. The NBA tried to stop this by adding the 5-second closely guarded rule, which states if a player has a ball for more than 5 seconds and they're being closely guarded, they will blow the whistle and possessions will change. They also installed a shot clock, as you know, and there was some perception that the shot clock wouldn't allow teams to have the opportunity for varied styles of play. But you have this all to thank because of the four corners offense. Check for it the next time you're watching a basketball game. Towards the end of the game, you'll notice the four corner offense. Hey, Justin here to talk to you about Loot Crate. If you haven't heard what Loot Crate is, it's this really cool idea where you get a box shipped to your door every single month between the 20th and the 25th of each month. And it's going to have between 4 to 6 gamer, geek, and pop culture items valued over about $45. You can get exclusive products from top gaming entertainment franchises and cool limited edition stuff like shirts, vinyls, figures, and other collectibles. It really works out. It's cool. It's like getting a Christmas gift every single month, and it's only $20 a month. So you're paying $20, but you're getting $45 in retail value back. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Now, you have to sign up by the 19th to get that month's crate, and obviously the 19th has passed, so that crate, just to tell you, was Power, Hulk, Super Saiyan, all stuff like that. It's pretty cool. They haven't announced the newest one yet. It's coming up. So, what you could do is go to lootcrate.com/driveanddish, and then if you want to decide to go with one of the loot crates or maybe Loot Crate DX or Level Up, you know, there's a whole lot of different ones you could do. Once you pick the one you want to do, enter in the promo code DRIVENDISH and you'll get $3 off. And if all that was too much, please go to driveanddishpodcast.com and click on our sponsors tab and it'll show you how to do it there. It really shows Loot Crate and us that you support the show.
I was watching Jefferson, Richard Jefferson on Snapchat, really great follow. And Justin brought this up, but you know he has a picture of a model that looks like Kevin Love and he got it laminated?
Yeah, Lil Kev.
Lil Kev, and he brings it around with him everywhere. He got a shirt that Lil Kev was wearing, and then he got the shirt for himself. So he sits next to his picture of Lil Kev on the plane wearing the same button-up Hawaiian shirt that other Lil Kev was wearing. I had no idea Richard Jefferson had so much personality.
Oh, me neither. He's a great follow on Snapchat, and you also got to see the other day that the Cavs basically like drenched Tyronn Lue in water because he's now 10-0 in the playoffs as a playoff coach or as an NBA head coach, I should say. Yeah. Look, you know, there's a ESPN piece that got published and it was funny because it harkened back to an interview where they asked LeBron, they're like, oh, you know, how much you worried about those 25 games you need to win the finals? And LeBron starts laughing. He taps Tristan Thompson on the shoulder and he goes, Tristan, how many games you need to win the finals? And Tristan says 16, and LeBron goes, yeah, we're talking about 16.
You know LeBron James sleeps in a hyperbolic chamber?
I believe that. And that's such a LeBron thing to do.
Richard Jefferson Snapchatted it. And just him, LeBron just sleeping in a hyperbolic chamber.
Dude, he's an alien. I mean, look at it. I mean, seriously, like LeBron James, is there a better athletic specimen ever than LeBron James?
Not that I can think of. That's why we had the discussion on the last show. Who would you rather take, LeBron or Curry? If you had to just draft him.
I just mean in general. Like, this transcends basketball. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's 6'8", probably 300
Tiger
pounds,
Woods.
But runs like a freaking cheetah, but has the mass and the force of, like, a freight train coming your way.
Tiger Woods, man.
What?
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods was... His fall off is so interesting. And we're not going to really talk about this at all because it has nothing to do with this podcast. But it really is crazy how quickly Tiger Woods fell from grace.
Yeah, it's still a really big draw at all the tournaments, though. People still really like to watch him play.
Well, he hasn't golfed in a while now. I don't even really think he's the biggest draw anymore. I think Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and some of these other guys have kind of taken away from that.
I mean, he played last year at the Players.
Yeah, he played last year at the Players, and people will still always follow Tiger. Like, even if Tiger never wins another tournament, like, Tiger is a legend. He's one of the best golfers of all time. His run of dominance is pretty unparalleled. It's just, man, it all ended so quick, and you just didn't think it would be like that. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. We appreciate it, as always. Want to give a shout-out to the good folks at Blog Talk Radio for hosting the show. You can always listen to us on iTunes, or if you're not an Apple user, on Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn, pretty much any podcasting app, we're there. You can definitely check out all of our episodes as well if you're lost at driveanddishpodcast.com. And we do want to say that Justin will be back next week making his triumphant return from Jamaica.
Yeah, he's back from Jamaica and his birthday. If you guys haven't had a chance yet, make sure you tweet him at Justin C on there and give him a happy belated birthday. But if you guys are interested in checking out the show, supporting the show's sponsors, you can go to driveanddishpodcast.com and just click on the sponsors tab, and all the info is there for Loot Crate as well as for SeatGeek. If you haven't had a chance yet, add us on Facebook at Drive and Dish Podcast. We're also on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. If you're so inclined, you can add us individually on Twitter. I am at Radio Tim NBA. Kevin is at Ray Fuse to Lose, and Justin is at Justin C on the air.
And you can check out our Instagram page too, Drive and Dish Podcast.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Hey, let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get